Welcome to the Internet Report's Pulse Update. This is a bi-weekly podcast where we discuss what's up, what's down, and what's trending on the internet. And today, this is a very special episode. We're coming to you, you're not hearing the nice therapeutic sounds of Australia, but you're hearing the background to Cisco Live. We're live here in Las Vegas. And I'm joined today by my good friend, Kamal Shankta.
Thank you so much. It's awesome to be here. I hope that everyone out there is having a good time as much as we do here in Vegas.
It's been pretty good. It's actually been very good this year. We've had a lot of coverage and lots of stuff coming through from there. And a lot of people visiting the booth is where we're actually broadcasting from for today. All right. So today we're going to be talking about a possible spring cleaning. So sort of things we see out there that might explain some spike we've seen in outages towards the beginning of the month. So we've observed a similar sort of thing over the past few years. We also want to unpack some recent outages at Twitter, Microsoft 365, Slack, Instagram, Apple's iMessage, and HBO's new subscription-based streaming service, Max. But before we get there, let's start with a download, which is a quick summarization, essentially my TLDR, what you need to know about the internet in 2 minutes or less. So when looking at the overall outage trends over the past month, in early May, we again saw a brief spike in outages. So we've observed this now for three consecutive years around this same time. So this seasonal spike could be explained by potential spring cleaning. What we mean is when many IT teams sort of in May seem to be some final spring clean of their infrastructure and setups at this time. And they sort of seize opportunity to slot in and schedule time where they can actually do additional engineering or sort of maintenance work. On top of this, we also saw several outages at major companies in recent weeks, which we're going to dive into deeper. We're going to dive into a little bit of depth into Twitter, Twitter disruption, and the Microsoft 365 outage later in the episode. But first, I want to give a quick overview of these and some other outages that caught our attention recently. So let's start off with Twitter Spaces. So Twitter used its live audio conversations feature, Twitter Spaces, on May the 24th to host the presidential candidate announcement by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. So the announcement was actually impacted by several technical problems that caused issues accessing the Twitter space. At the beginning, you might hear a forklift backing up behind me there. But at the beginning of the event, these issues, issues occurred at the beginning of the event there. The issues might have been caused by the high number of users actually sort of trying to access the stream concurrently, but it's more likely the bottleneck was sort of further down at the entrance point to the stream itself, rather than the stream infrastructure being able to support that number of concurrent users wanting to access it. So however, in the case of the Twitter Spaces event, it would have been really difficult for Twitter to identify such a bottleneck beforehand. Typically, they test traffic, don't they? Sort of test traffic patterns, but test the traffic volume to that number wouldn't have been possible. And so, for just testing the functionality, it wouldn't have triggered the event. Instead, it's likely the potential bottleneck would only have become available when they sort of actually started from there. So moving on to HBO's new subscription-based streaming service, Max HBO, has updated subscription-based streaming service Max and experienced some issues on its May 23rd launch date, easy for me to say, with users encountering some inaccessible streams. A spokesman initially attributed the problems to a scale issue, and this does appear to be the cause. So a large number of customers all hitting the service at the same time to sort of try it out, this sort of new tries we got from there. Now, Microsoft, in the Microsoft 365, on May 23rd, Microsoft reported issues with the content rendering on Office.com and other services that came under Microsoft 365. The service could still be reached and partially loaded, but elements of the page content would not render, sort of due to some back-end calls in other services that sort of failed to complete. This manifested as the users are either incomplete page loads or unresponsive when they're trying to search or pull information in, and just some general timeouts from there. And then just over a week later, on June the 5th, Microsoft experienced another outage impacting the Microsoft 365 services. Now, this outage was actually sort of made up of several sustained periods of disruption over 27 hours. I'm going to go into that in a little bit of depth in a minute there. So Slack also, Slack users encountered error messages when they were trying to connect to the service. This was relatively short, it was a 30-minute period during the mid-morning, Pacific time, to say there, on May the 17th. The company acknowledged that the load problems were in a state advisory and they attributed them to the operational change. So they made a change that had an error in it, and this caused the database to become inaccessible, basically couldn't access from there. So what was happening, you actually couldn't get information when you're sort of trying to load the screens there. Sort of moving on to Instagram, there was a technical issue that left users globally unable to access Meta's Instagram on May the 21st. And this was when users attempting to open the app were greeted with an error message that they couldn't load the feed. So refreshing the homepage and the profiles did not work. The impact was actually global, went across everyone. The duration was actually 2 to 3 hours. And what we actually saw going off there again, we'll sort of cover this, we saw a lot of sort of 500 errors, again, indicative of the problem being coming from the server side. And finally, in this TLDR, the Apple's iMessage. So on May 23rd, Apple confirmed some users were unable to send or download attachments in iMessage. The problems did not appear to impact all users globally, only a subset of Apple infrastructure. Additionally, the issue didn't really appear to generate a significant number of outage reports. And you know, one reason for this could have been that iMessage has this automatic backup mechanism that kicks in when iMessage can't be delivered over the internet, so it sort of falls back to SMS. So it may have just been that sort of people were sort of having this workaround from there.
So what's really quite interesting here is the fact that a lot of these different mission critical and enterprise application actually went down at the same time or during the same time frame. You know? And this is something that's really interesting. Now we saw this paradigm shift as part of which users move towards the on-prem applications, towards the SaaS-based applications, and they expect them to actually work. But if you look at this, a lot of these mission critical applications such as Office 365 or Slack that are critical for people to actually effectively and productively do their job actually are having problems. So again, this underpins the importance of visibility. As part of which people need to have the easy way to say whether it's an issue on their side or whether it's an issue on the provider side.
Yeah, absolutely. And they want to be able to understand where it is so we can take steps around it. So if something's not there, is it me? Is it you?
Exactly.
And where can we actually drill into? So that's great. So we're going to dig into the Microsoft and go from there. So as always, we've included chapter links in the description box below so you can skip ahead to the sections that are most interesting to yourself. As always, we'd like to hit like and subscribe and email us at any time at internetreport@thousandeyes.com. I'd also just actually like to sort of call out there and welcome you. We always welcome your feedback and questions, but just call out the people who have actually come up to us here and on the sessions that myself and Kamal have been running and saying they listen to the podcast. We sort of thank you very much, and we'd like to keep that up there. And as I said, keep the feedback coming in there.
Well appreciated.
Absolutely. And with that, let's take a quick look at the overall outage trends we've been seeing. All right, so now to my favorite part of the podcast, where we actually look at the numbers and the outage trends that we've been seeing over the past couple of weeks. And actually in this case, what we saw sort of over the May period. So following that sharp spike we observed at the start of May, the global outage numbers were more reasonably stable during the end of May and beginning of June. So May 22nd to the June 4th period there. They initially sort of dipped down. We saw this sort of slight drop there from 174 to 170, which is a 2% decrease when compared to that May 15th, 21st time period. This was followed by a slight rise, you know, sort of really marginal, with global outages sort of increasing from 170 to 176, which is a 4% increase compared to the previous. This pattern was not actually reflected in the US, where outages sort of constantly increased across a two-week period, initially rising. Again, we're talking about slight rises here. So it went from 71 to 78, a 10% increase compared to May 15th, 21st. And then the numbers again increased the following week by 10%, rising from 76 to 86. If we actually look at sort of where the US-centric outages accounted for, what they accounted for in a total global outages there, we saw 40% of all observed outages from May 22nd to June 4th, which is actually larger, much larger in this case, than the percentage observed between May the 8th and 21st, where they accounted for 40% of the observed outages. And this actually continues this trend we've seen over the recent weeks there, where the US-centric outages are accounting for at least 40% of all the observed outages. Now, I want to sort of focus on May overall there. And in May, we saw the total global outages rise from 1,026 to 1,305, which is a 27% increase when compared to April. And the US-centric outages also rose, climbing from 451 to 597, which is a 32% increase. And this ends that trend we've seen, we observed in both March and April, where the global outages decreased each month, while the US-centric outages increased. But I want to go back to that May, to the start of May, because the fact that the these numbers have gone up. We've seen that sort of 47% increase from there. And we had that huge spike in the middle there that sort of makes everything dwarf down there.
Yeah.
But we didn't see too much disruption. And we talked about a little about this in the last podcast. We didn't see too much disruption in terms of chatter on the internet, people complaining about sort of access there. So one of the things, and we sort of mentioned this about the spring cleaning. So, you know, do you think that could be reflected there?
Yeah, for sure. One of the things that I was thinking about while you were speaking about it is actually that a lot of these companies during this time of the year actually engage in what they call cleaning of the technical debt.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and technical debt is not something that, you know, you push for quite some time under the blankets or under the carpets, right? And then, like, it there's always going to be time that it gets you, right? So
yeah.
Sometimes it gets you really hard way, sometimes actually quite minor. And in this particular case, even though the numbers are actually quite large, if you think about it, global versus US is like, and even for the US, it was pretty significant compared to the rest of the period of time that we just spoke about. You know, it actually looks like people were affected, but fortunately enough, it wasn't as noticeable as it's as it can get.
That's true. I mean, because I think, and if we actually delved, or I did delve down into it, I spend my day looking at the numbers. This is a very sad life I lead. But then, actually looking at the time of day they're occurring,
yes.
And they were reasonably contained. But this is impact. So if you look at the US numbers there, we sort of see it increasing, and that fact that we're seeing this over, you know, pretty close to 50%,
yes,
and these recurring, it's sort of, I think, indicative again of this, the time of day, and the
yes.
fact then that we're seeing this sort of this spring cleaning as we're taking
yes,
place.
I agree. It's actually quite good that they were not reflected as a pretty large outages.
Absolutely.
Often do.
Yeah. And with that, what I want to do, let's actually sort of take a look at some of those outages that were actually user impacting, as we're going to take a look under the hood. All right. So the first outage you want to take a look at was the Twitter. It was more of a disruption that came place. So Twitter used its live audio conversations feature, Twitter Spaces, this on May 24th, to host the presidential candidate announcement for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. This candidacy announcement was impacted by technical problems that caused issues accessing the Twitter space. But this was the beginning of the event from there. After about 15 minutes, the space was sort of relaunched, this time on a different profile. So it was initially launched under Elon Musk's profile, and they started around from there. And then they actually came and they sort of launched under another profile, and then people could access, and it actually started from there. So to understand this incident, it's worth dwelling a little bit on how Spaces operates, or how Spaces actually work from there. So it's actually launched from an individual user's profile, as I understand it. And if you then take the case, it's actually launched from Elon Musk's profile. He's the most Twitter users at 140 million users across from there.
Pretty significant, right?
Absolutely, quite a lot. And then what happens as we go through this? So even you didn't have to be... you don't have to be a follower of Elon Musk to actually access the stream. It's available via URL. You can get to it through a browser. You can actually get to it from Twitter without having to be a user. Or you don't have to be logged on to Twitter. You don't have to be a member of Twitter around from there. But if you are a follower of Elon Musk, what happens is we go through this process where it puts a notification in the profile that says, Elon Musk is having a Spaces stream at the moment there. So we then you can actually go onto it. Now, from what we saw looking at the stream, we could actually see as it goes through this process, we could see it does a little bit of an authentication, and it's just authenticate that you're a follower.
Mm-hmm.
And it does this so it can actually put up from there. So what this meant is, or means is, you could have potentially 140 million users trying to access, and it has to go through this verification process itself. And you know, if we look at the architecture of Twitter from there, it's actually fairly robust. It's taken this. It's used to this many concurrent users.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why we're saying it was this downstream. And this little verification process, we could see as it's going through the stream. It's sort of indicative of that.
Mm-hmm. And speaking about the technical issue itself, like, you know, if you have like 140 million users, and potentially it was not the number that was, you know, number of users that were trying to access the service.
Was the potential.
Exactly.
The potential of that money, yeah.
Imagine how hard it is to scale that service.
Impossible. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But all of that are good problems to have when you are, you know, service provider.
Yeah, absolutely. Just on that scaling issue there as well, it's also, why would you scale to that? You know,
yes.
Elon Musk is by far the the largest number of
most popular person
there.
On there. Yeah.
So why would I do it for that exception? I mean, unless he's going to sort of run one of these bases every day. So there's no harm. And I'll tell you one thing, if you actually think about it, they sort of recognize it fairly quickly.
Yes.
And then they restarted for another profile that had less followers. And then everything went smoothly and they were able to sort of do it.
That company is very good at what they do. Their SRE practices are fantastic. So I'm not even surprised that what we saw is actually what happened there.
Good resolution. All right, so let's change tack a little bit and delve into a couple of Microsoft outages. So first one, on May 23rd, Microsoft reported issues with content rendering on Office.com, right, and some other services attached under Microsoft 365. These services could still be reached. This is quite an important point when we get into the second one. The services, or both of them, the services could be reached and partially loaded. All right, so you could actually get it, I could get a page up there, but elements of the page, the content, was failing to render when it came out from there. So as the users, this would manifest itself either in incomplete page loads or unresponsive. So you went on there, so yeah, you know, I'm gonna hit the button harder until I actually get a response coming up from there. But then just over a week later, on June the 5th, this is when Microsoft experienced another outage that impacted Microsoft 365. This was had a far greater impact than sort of just being unable to sort of render page around from there. And when we actually looked at this, outage is made up of several sustained periods of disruption spread over 27 hours. Disruption lasted around 8 hours in total when you actually look at that. So with that, we actually captured this quite well because it showed up quite well. So it was a global outage. So what I actually like to do is have you come on to take us through and sort of show you what we saw this was, how it manifests itself.
Yeah, it was a pretty significant event, and I'm actually quite glad to take you over that.
Microsoft unfortunately experienced sustained outages over a period of 2 days, effectively, as part of which one of their mission critical applications, and in this particular case, it was Outlook, actually sustained significant outage.
Yeah. So it was service in the back as well. So it was the actual, yes, it was a connectivity and it was a service in the back there. And it was over two physical days. It was like a 27-hour period.
Exactly.
So we had the back of one and the start of another. Which
essentially, if you were not able to read your email 2 days ago, one of the things that contributed to that is exactly this outage. So on 5th of June at 9:15 CDT, we can see that there was a significant spike in server errors. So if I click on start of that outage, you can quite clearly see that what's happening is that from various different locations towards the Microsoft Office 365, there were various connectivity issues and outage. So even as we progress with this particular event, we can see that it's actually getting worse and worse when it comes to metric that we call servers.
Yeah. So and there's a couple of things here as well. So for the people listening on audio, we're actually looking now at a 1000 Eyes platform, and what we're seeing here is we've gone into the Internet Insights, and we can actually see this is, you know, my favorite things. We're looking at patterns. And one thing I thought was fairly interesting is, like you said, the sustained period, but it's spiky.
It is.
So when we see things coming up and down, it's like sometimes a nice clear ladder and a clear ladder down. In this case, it was, I say, spiky.
Yes. And that's potentially like issue kind of gets detected, you know, and first of all, it progresses to the maximum point, and then they observe it and they try to do something about it, be it a restart of services, adding more capacity or whatever it may be, that kind of like could potentially explain, you know, the staircase kind of effect.
Yeah. So in this case, they identified, we're seeing issues, we know there's issues there.
Yes.
We've done a change. We've actually implemented some change, and then to mitigate it, started rolling it back. And I think that's where we sort of see it clear.
Exactly.
Yeah?
Exactly. So it's actually quite interesting to see the outages, because once you switch over to the locations, so once you click on the locations, you can actually see that this was a properly global outage.
Yeah.
We can see that it's 66 global locations that were affected. Going back to servers.
Yeah, but isn't that global outage thing as well? It's, I mean, and obviously your session here on the network detective, but the fact then we're looking at an application. Is it safe to say that we can almost assume it's going to be global because it's at that application layer?
Not really.
Because it's a SaaS, no?
Well, not really, right?
Like,
it could be potentially isolated to certain regions, right? Because if you think about the cloud deployments, like what's the first thing that they teach you? You should potentially have the redundancy, be it a multi-AZ, multi-regional, or something like that. So having something like this actually can tell you whether it's a global in a time span of a few minutes.
Excellent. So then moving in that train of thought a bit further on there, the fact then it was at the application within city network, reachability problem, we could reach these services, the front end, we were getting server errors coming back, but the fact then we couldn't go forward and it was this global thing there, we could then say something within almost a distribution level. so we can see stuff within that distribution.
Yeah, correct. So here, if I click on Microsoft Office 365, it's going to tell me that there were 504 affected servers at Microsoft Office 365. Yeah. And if I actually click on that, I can, you know, break it down into more details. And if I keep on doing that, I can see what are the prefixes that were affected as well, which is really, really powerful from the perspective of, you know, identifying what's happening. So we can see here, for example, that it's 50% of all tests from our platform. Yep. Now, before I actually switch in one of the tests that actually code this into details, one of the things that I want to say about Internet Insights is the fact that it's actually data driven. This is powered by tens of thousands of, if not more, tests that are actually measuring packet loss, latency, jitter, and various other criteria. Yep. And it's going to actually give you a data driven decision whether something's a problem or not.
I think it's close to 3 billion measurements a day we're actually looking at.
Which is amazing if you think about it. So as you can see, this event happened in multiple stages, as part of which we can see like it happened in the morning, then there was appearance of this in the afternoon, and then we saw it later on, you know, happening day after actually.
Yeah, and it, my patterns coming again, so we have the rollback, we clear it, there's a gap, and then it happens again, they acknowledge it's happening again. But if you look at the number of servers, we've actually decreased again. So as we saw, we have this decremental effect, as it were, coming down as we go across each one of these occurrences.
Exactly, and which is actually quite interesting that we even saw the reoccurrence of this event.
Yes.
You know, what's really actually interesting here is that, you know, and what I think might have been happening is that let's actually move forward with the change that we originally wanted, and let's see what it's actually breaking. And now, this time around, we are going to potentially know how to resolve the issue faster and contain it. So this might explain what we are seeing over these 2 days.
So let's just go and take a look what it looked like as we go down into one of those, an individual test.
So what are we looking at now is HTTP server test, as part of which the target URL is outlook.office365.com. One of the interesting things here is that we obviously observed significant impact on the metric that we call availability.
Yep.
Availability is nothing else than capability of the agents that are assigned to test to actually do DNS resolution, three-way handshake, SSL negotiation. We measure the time it takes and to send and receive the first byte of information, and HTTP, which is essentially what's the HTTP status code that we are getting back.
Yep.
So again, going back to the timestamp, we see that at 9:10 or 9:15 CDT a few days back, we saw significant degradation. Now, looking at the world map, we can quite clearly see, and it's very graphically represented, that all of these agents went red. Yep. And if I click on the table here, I can see where they were failing. So receive 503s and stuff like that.
Yep. Yep.
So one of the things that network engineers tend to ask themselves very often is this a server-related issue or it's a network, you know? And, you know, ThousandEyes is one of these tools that can bridge that gap between different silos, right?
Yep.
As part of which, server people tend to blame the network. We say, go ahead, blame the network, right?
Yeah, it's funny you say that as well, because it depends which audience. So I've spoken to a bunch of DBAs, they say, oh, they always blame the database.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that blame game is always happening.
Correct.
Now, fortunately enough, this tool is actually something that can bridge that gap between different teams. And so, for network engineers, in order to check whether this was a network-related issue, the only thing that you can do is you can click on the path visualization.
Yep.
And as indicated with the purple lines on the timeline, we can quite see that this is a period of time when the issue was happening. However, we can see very small spikes of packet loss.
So we're seeing loss. That's what we're looking at for that there. It's
exactly.
Loss relations
yes.
when the outage.
Yes, yes. The metric here is loss.
Yep.
In general, like on the path visualization, what we are looking at is loss, latency, and jitter, depending on different requirements. So here, as indicated by the purple lines, what's happening is that this is the period of where Internet Insights actually captured the outage itself.
Yeah.
And we can see that while there are very small spikes in packet loss, it's quite easy to say that this wasn't related to the packet loss. And furthermore, if I navigate down to see the path visualization, we can pretty much see that all of the agents that were assigned, so for example, Atlanta, Georgia, Chicago, Illinois, Los Angeles, California, we can see the
reachability,
is there, right?
Yeah.
And if I click on the Office 365, we can see different instances that these agents were trying to reach, and we can see that all of this from the network perspective, is pretty much reachable. Just for our audience, it's important to mention that all of these circles that we are looking at are essentially networking hops from our agents towards the target itself.
And I think the other thing we can actually pull from, and when you went back to the other table there, with the fact we're looking at that, my favorite thing, the OSI 7-layer model, we can see the connectivity. So go back to the HP server view there, we can see it come through there. But also then the fact in the table you said was still 503. So 5XX is something that's a server generated.
Exactly.
So we know we're getting something back from the server. It doesn't necessarily mean that the backend service is available, but what it means is I can get to this point and now it's a problem within that server. So it's not my client, it's not my network.
Server-related network.
Correct.
Server-related issue, yes. So unfortunately, this spent a pretty extensive period of time, 27 hours for that matter. But I think like networking people were quite revealed to know that it wasn't your
fault. It wasn't a network. And the other thing before we move on from there, I just want to say is that it's actually, you can see the spiky nature again. So it was really frustrating. And so this came up, I actually saw this. So we obviously experienced this ourselves, this outage when it came out there. And if I was actually accessing the app from my phone, so I was actually doing it through my Apple client, so the mail connecting through there, I could actually send and receive. If I was trying to do it through OWA, if I was trying to do it actually on the thick client on the desktop, it wouldn't work. So it was there. So it had this intermittent one, which again is representative of the fact that we have availability, but it's not going down completely to zero each time. So it wasn't a complete failure, which makes it even more frustrating.
Yes, I agree. Intermittent connectivity to the service, it's never good.
Fine, which is then why you need that consistent or that constant visibility to actually see what's going on.
We cannot stress more, and we do stress it quite a bit, but visibility is paramount in what we do.
Well, that's great, Kamal. That's excellent. Thanks very much. Well, thanks, Kamal. As always, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. Whenever I can actually stand face-to-face with you and talk, it's very good.
Likewise.
We had so much information, we could have carried on for days, but the show's about to open, so we actually sort of need to bring that to a close now.
Thank you so much, Mike, and I hope we repeat this on future Cisco Lives as well.
Thanks very much. All right, so thanks very much. That's our show. Please like and subscribe and follow us on Twitter at ThousandEyes. Any questions, feedback, or guests you'd like to see, please just send us a note at the internetreport@thousandeyes.com. So until next time, thanks and goodbye.